Well, because I mean, he gives the game away in fucking Simply Rich. Dave Armandom writes in Compassionate Capitalism, Amway, and the Role of Small Business Conservatives in the New Right. He alludes to it. He says Richard DeVos wrote, "When we started Amway, we thought it's okay to start a business to make money, but what's the ultimate purpose of our business? What does it stand for? What's driving it emotionally beyond just trying to make money? So standing up for free enterprise was our battle cry." It's not the money; it's the ability to extract money from the fucking like chumps who are slaving away for you. I mean, DeVos himself says it. You know, you can either work a drudgery, like toilish job, or you can take a chance. You can become somebody who breaks that cycle. You know, he acknowledges that there have to be chumps doing the fucking scut work and being paid scut wages.
Although, ironically, the vast majority of those people are going to be making way more money than all but 1% of Amway distributors. If the top 10% has a median, not to bang the drum too hard, but
no, it's an important drum to bang.
$4,610 medium for the top 10% of earners, pre-expense.
Yeah, I mean, this would be, of course, heinous if he was running a normal company. The fact that it's a multi-level marketing company is just chef's kiss. You couldn't satirize it better. You couldn't have made it up. It's fascinating because he's also just he's hammering you with this toxic positivity. And that is exactly what it is.
Yes.
Because he also has this thing where he's repeatedly telling stories of people overcoming things like disabilities and accidents. And that's great. And I'm super happy for them. But it is a thing where he's and they said, no, I'm not disabled. And it's and that is awesome that they were able to overcome that. And that he has a story of a guy being able to walk again that he never thought he would be able to walk. But he's able to walk again into this conference for Amway distributors.
Yeah.
You are able to walk again so that you can once again become profitable. He writes, you have this guy, Jeff, that he just goes through horrible shit. Right. And I quoted this, and this is from Jeff supposedly. "No matter what came our way," Jeff says, "we never quit. In 1987, our newborn baby died, but life doesn't just stop because tragedy jumps in front of you. This business has taught me that in spite of tragedies, in spite of obstacles, you should stand up and go do what you're supposed to and quit whimpering about the circumstances." And then he says, "If you have faced adversity, learn from those troubled times and begin again. If you don't have a college degree or even a high school education, take what you do have and make the most of it. If you don't make a sale today, you will make one tomorrow. Ask yourself, what lesson can I learn from this tragedy? Let adversity be your friend and teacher," end quote. And the whole classic Satan's lies are 90% truth. Yes, positivity is good. Saying I'm gonna get through this, that's great.
Yes,
10 making positive phrases, event, saying I'm sorry, saying I'm wrong, there is genuine value and insight certain of those credos.
To take it and say therefore all situations are surmountable no matter what, and I'm not going to look into any context or not going to find any way around it, to say that therefore I'm going to become profitable and again sell cheap bullshit. Hey, there's nothing to it. It is so empty and so hollow and so horrifying when you think about it.
Well, I also think there's something that's really upsetting about, having myself been through my fair share of tragedy. It's a big part of tragedy, living with tragedy and coping with it, is allowing yourself to sit in the pain. You have to. Mm-hmm. You must. If you're not able to make peace with these horrible things, which requires you to feel those bad feelings extensively, you're not really going to be able to get through it. Instead, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be sort of papering over that trauma. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this is kind of encouraging people to do, right? Yep. Is don't worry about it. Just work a little bit harder and you will get there. And it's a problem from a materialist perspective, but also just from a basic psychological human well-being perspective.
And he says, it's a direct quote in one of his million rants about positivity. He says, if you do good things, if you go out and give yourself away, it doesn't matter. Good things will happen to you.
But what if they fucking don't?
Yeah, what if
Right,
you
right.
$4,000 after slaving away at their company for a year? What then, Rich? And the answer is, no, that won't happen, or you weren't positive, or whatever. And like they get, yeah, like you said, papered over. Sometimes things suck, and that's, I mean, it's not okay. The point is that it's not okay. But sometimes things are just bad, and then you deal with them.
Right.
But you don't,
Right. He
but you don't
starts.
do this thing where it's like, oh, I breathed in toxic fumes my whole life, and now I have 50%
God, that was fucking
capacity.
vile,
And the
dude.
answer to that is not to talk about how the guy was put into a situation where he had to breathe toxic fumes in. It's to say, let's find this guy another job that he can slave away another 10 years at and be profitable because he's a straight shooter. And because I'm his upline distributor, I'm making X percent of that. And it doesn't mention that. It just mentions, oh, I was helping him. The fuck you were,
And you
every
know
one of
what?
those sales you
13
were
years
making
later,
got
he
cut off.
fucking died anyway.
Yes.
Like, good God. Like, he still died young. But hey, at least he was able to flog some shit before he.
Well,
I mean. It...
and the way that it always does all of this sort of with a smile too, where it's like, well, isn't that just so nice that this was able to happen? And it's just,
Well, I
ugh.
mean, because he's starting off with vibes. He's starting off with certain values that he holds dear with, you know, as you say, no material basis. Like, I mean, I'm looking at chapter three here, right, where he's talking about all the things that are wrong with American society, right?
Yeah.
You know, trust in our institutions is low. Why is it low? Is it perhaps because our institutions don't serve working people? Oh no, you know, people are just getting more and more
They're
more
just negative.
yeah, exactly. You know, Americans are first among the world's democracies who say they're actively interested in politics, but last in actual voter turnout. We're lucky to get 50% of registered voters to a voter's booth, whereas in Switzerland, for example, nearly 80% on average turn out to vote. You know what else country that's true of? Cuba. He doesn't bring that up. He doesn't interrogate that oddly. A country where, you know, people are actually engaged in building something that serves them. This is my favorite part from that little spiel. The traditional American family is also in decline. What we once regarded as the mainstay of our society has become the exception and not the rule. Between 1960 and 1980, the number of divorces in this country shot up by 100%. If the numbers hold, an alarming 50% of all first marriages will end in. Do you know what
If the
happens?
numbers hold, everybody's going to get divorced
Yeah.
eventually.
Many people are saying, do you know what else happened between 1960 and 1980? Women in 1974 could open bank accounts in their
Right.
own rights, right? You can leave your abusive
Right.
husband. You can be financially independent. Like, some things have to end in divorce. I'm sorry.
The this is a stolen directly from Tom Sexton of the Trillbillies, but he said he has a quote where he said, the family is always in decline, and the church is always in a sorry state. And I will he said it way better in his voice. If you know the Trillbillies, then you
Yeah,
know
yeah,
how
yeah.
he said
No,
it
that's good
perfectly.
though.
It's always the church is always in a sorry state, and the
Yep.
family's always in decline. Read the writings in the 50s. Read the writings in the 40s and the 30s. It's in decline. We're in a sorry state. We're not like yesteryear. And there is truth to the idea of like there has been decline in certain places, and the question is why that decline's occurring and why that
Right.
skepticism exists. And is it maybe because people like this guy strip mined what we did have in the economy? And that is like gets extra egregious, and I know that's like towards the end of the book when he starts talking about like protecting the planet, and he is like, I don't really know what the solutions are, but and he even like throws in, yeah, the Amazon's burning, a lot of that has to do with poor people. He literally
Yes,
says some of it has
yes.
to do with poor people, but you know, carbon, he's like, I'm not sure what all that's about. He would go on and had to date endlessly aggressively lobbied against it doing anything about climate change.
Yeah, like my brother in Christ, you are funding the think tanks that say we should have less welfare.
Yeah, it's oh
Well,
man.
and it applies as well to public health, right? Going
Yes.
back to the AIDS thing, I've got a really great quote here from Richard DeVos. This was something that he said fairly close to when he died. Like, this was an interview with M Live, which is like the local news outlet in Michigan, West
Yes.
Michigan. When HIV first came out, President Reagan formed a commission, and I was honored to be on that commission. I listened to 300 witnesses tell us that it was everybody else's fault but their own. Nothing to do with their conduct, just that the government didn't fix this disease. At the end of that, I put in the document, it was the conclusion document from the commission, that actions have consequences and you are responsible for yours. AIDS is a disease people gain because of their actions. And this could very easily be a quote from this book,
Yes.
Were it not for the fact that he very clearly goes out of his way to not have stuff like this in the book, because he doesn't want to go too far down the road of blaming people for their own failure, because that is the other side of the coin here, right? Like, he repeatedly in this book talks about the importance of positivity and, oh, why aren't more people positive, blah, 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 blah. Why don't these people, why don't more people take accountability for their actions? But he's going to point you to positive examples of people who did, as opposed to negative examples of people who didn't, such as, I guess, every American who got AIDS. Like,
It's and of course that like comes with its own set of, I mean, obviously with the AIDS thing, there's just straight up the homophobia of it.
Right.
But there's also just, it also just comes with this idea of like, it's how he views class. Because he, of course, and he actually does talk about Marx in this, which I did want to get to.
Yes,
he talks
yes.
about Marx and Adam Smith, and this is a good segue
into
that.
He calls Adam Smith materialism.
Yeah, he does historical materialism.
He does he does
his description of Marx is actually okay. It's actually not a bad description of Marx or Adam Smith.
The Adam Smith one is quite detailed. The Marx one is a little bit cursory, I thought. But
he does call Adam Smith the first economist, which is insane. But but he basically has this view of class that is, I mean, he doesn't have this idea of like owners and workers. He does have some concept of like owners and suckers, I think.
Yeah.
But he does constantly say now we can't all be owners. He has a quote from 10 powerful phrases that says, how successful would a company be that consisted of just presidents? Which I was like, you're close, Rich. You're close.
So close.
In fact,
keep going.
We got, let me flip it around. How successful would a company be if it was just distributors? Wait, it would work? Interesting. but he says, but he goes into like, he does this like history of capitalism and like talks about
it
like,
is
mercantilism.
Wild to me that he talks
weird.
About it without mentioning colonialism at all. Sorry, go
My
on.
Dude decides to talk about primitive accumulation. It's like he talks about like Adam Smith and the invisible hand and like
he even talks about the definition of dialectic.
Yeah. Like, expound on that because I've been talking for a second.
Joss or
either one of you, go for it.
Well, I do have an excerpt up here.
Please, that's ideal because I lost my place.
Well, so we've got that primer on Adam Smith and sort of what his deal is, basically being like, he saw that capitalism had the ability to grow wealth by having people, you know, sell freely, and that agents of individual capitalism could exist in a way that is separate from sort of the state and the sort of mercantilist tradition. And then he goes on and talks about Marx, and he says, and there's a big bold header here, who was Karl Marx and why was he so angry about capitalism?
And, many are asking this.
And his description basically is, Marx viewed the Industrial Revolution and capitalism with the eyes of a revolutionary critic, and he did not like what he saw. He was an angry man. He did not believe that capitalism just needed a little tuning up, an adjustment here, a couple new parts there. He believed the whole vehicle had to go. Private property, private ownership of factories and the machines inside them, the political system, religion, everything. And furthermore, that competition caused crime, discontent, inequality, which is sort of like, it's the thing of like, he gets a little bit of the way there, but he doesn't ever actually describe like the relationship between, say, the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. He doesn't describe the way that labor is expropriated by the capitalist, right? He doesn't describe the way
a laborer made replaceable. You know, it's
right. And he doesn't describe the way that a wage relationship works and how that differs from like equity. There's just a lot of things that he doesn't explain because he doesn't know. But I think it's more likely that he doesn't want you to know.
Right. He wants it to, it's like, he wants it to be about like anger, about resentment.
Yes.
And he's like, I acknowledge there was a lot of bad things the capitalists were doing. And again,
rather
individual
than
actors.
Power. Yeah.
It's, and I mean, it's individual actors concept. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's, I mean, he has that example about, you know, too many merchants crowding the sidewalk. You know, he hits upon something that happened IRL with the Texas oil boom, right? Hills were literally bristling with personal oil derricks until oil companies stepped in to help like regulate it down to like themselves. Like he, you know, They will step in and write regulations that make it more favorable for them to do business specifically. He doesn't come right out and say that.
Right.
You
But
know,
that's
but
also, that's not an original observation. Adam Smith pointed that out. You know,
yeah.
like that's not.
Yes, exactly. As well as, you know, the labor theory of value as well. But I mean,
Right.
he's not interested in this, right? He's selling individual solutions to systemic problems that he doesn't
Yes.
really bother to explicate or interrogate, right? It's how to win friends and influence people coming out on the heels of labor organizing during the Great Depression, right? It's trying to promote this countercurrent to a very real discontent that even he himself acknowledges.
Something I'm kind of curious about, because you had mentioned the anger, right? And just like how he wanted to portray Marx first and foremost as angry. And angry is bad, of course, because, you know, it's good to be positive, it's good to be happy, it's good to be compassionate, it's bad to be angry. This happens throughout this book constantly. And for me, this was a big part of my upbringing, right? Being discouraged from like expressing that anger, because generally speaking, anger was seen as something fundamentally bad. Was this something that was kind of surprising to you? Was this in line with your experience, especially you, Jacob, having come from like more of a Christian upbringing?
Honestly, the anger as bad is such a weird line, right? Because it's like the type of anger, right? Because God can be an angry God. Like there is
Right.
righteous wrath. And I also, come from a sort of tradition that is more like, there is like a sort of an energy to it. Like it is not as soft spoken as some other denominations that I've experienced with like a lot of times with like Southern Baptists and that kind of thing. We spend a and non-denominational churches that are Southern Baptist in all but name. There is a lot of like rah-rah ex energy. Some of that just comes from the South. Some of that comes from straight up just like, the proximity to like literally being Christian schools that were also football schools. Some of that comes like it literally comes from that. However, there is this idea of like, why are the call them what you will, the libs or whatever, so angry? Why is BLM so angry?
Right.
Why are women or feminists or whatever, quote in quotations, so angry? And and the idea, and then that's where you get into the idea of like triggering the libs and all that. But it is like this idea that like that anger is wrong. And Rich does do a sort of, I'm not going to call it fair, but he's a little more fair than maybe some depictions you might have in like a Christian high school's history class of like Marx, where he's like, okay, Marx is mad for like some good reasons.
Sure.
That's not because Rich is a more reasonable person. I think that's because he is a little bit better at this than some of the people who would succeed him at this sort of propaganda war. He
I
has a
mean,
little more subtlety than PragerU.
it's I mean, at the end
No.
of the book, he says, like, if I'm greedy and I do all that I can to acquire wealth by hoarding power and exercising special privileges, in other words, if I restrict your freedoms, can I then expect you to respect mine? So he recognizes that there's a line that he has to walk here, right? In that
Right.
he gets you to buy into this, he gets you to buy into this grind, as it were, right? He gets you to say, okay, well, it's a personal failing of mine if I don't step up and do what you did. And once
Right.
I get there, right, I have to make damn sure that I don't piss too many people off.
And ultimately, he says, oh, it was right for him to be mad about child labor. But like, he cites an example of a child laborer that he says it was good that he wasn't resentful of his past, but instead learned from it. So like, Rich isn't that mad about child labor,
Right.
Also, like I mean, he tells a story about like a guy enlisting his kids to help build a house that are like 9 and 13.
And he also talks about he's like, yeah, parents get your kids involved, have them answer phone. And I'm like, it's a far, I'm all like, whatever, have a paper route. That's not what I'm talking about. Like, do eliminate sand, mow the lawn and get paid for it. But there's a far cry between that and like tell your kids about your finances and make them an integral part of it, which he wants to do because that is he is focusing on the family. I know
He
he's not,
is.
that's what he's doing.
Well, and that is quite literally what he did do. Like that
Yes.
he also talks extensively both in Compassionate Capitalism and 10 Positive Phrases about the way that his family has been integral in continuing to run the business,
Yes.
both Amway and the Orlando Magic. And I remember actually in high school, because I went to high school with the grandchildren, with Rich's grandkids, I remember that like some of the popular kids got to go with the DeVos grandkids to Magic games on the weekend. They'd fly down in the private jet, and you'd hear
Oh,
about it on
wow.
Monday. I did not run in those circles, but it's just one of those things where there is this he seems to lack, and again, I can't tell if it's calculated or not. And I'm always like this with this guy. It's like, how much of this is a persona versus who you really are? Do you really think that it's just totally normal to be like, oh yeah, I love to go out and get in my airplane and fly to Orlando and bring people down there on the reg? Or like, does he not realize that that's not normal, you
Well, he has a
know?
line in 10 Powerful Phrases where he says, "Well, it was convenient for me to get a private
Right.
plane. I
Well,
travel so
convenient for
much."
you, sure, but
Yeah.
like,
And it's like, he just drops that. And then he's like, "And yeah, Barbara Bush would come along sometimes, of course."
and that feels like a humble brag. That feels like a humble brag. You know what
Yes.
really felt like a humble brag was like, you know, sometimes I got letters from Barbara Bush. Oh, and her son, George W. Bush, does that too. It's like, yeah, I see what you did there, asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Which is funny to be bragging about that in like 2008,
I
2000,
know, right?
like the maybe the worst time. Like you could do it now. I feel like then that like maybe would be the worst time you could
Yeah.
conceivably brag about knowing Bush, but not in the circles he runs in
No, no, no.
because he said in 2009 we were sliding into socialism. So whatever. It's yeah, how cynical he is or how real it is. I know ultimately it doesn't matter, but it is a thing that plagued me reading this. I don't have a great answer. And I'm not going to say go read it and decide for yourself because I'm not
No,
telling you to go read
don't.
it.
No,
Don't
no, 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 no,
do
no.
that.
I feel a little bad having subjected both of you to this. Not like
Yeah.
super bad, but like a little bad.
It's like a look at the other side there
Yeah.
sometimes, and
Yes.
sometimes you need that. And I will say it's not as bad as us reading Ben Shapiro's book a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah,
Like
that's
I mean he knows how to hide his racism, right? His role in this in the structural aspects thereof, right? He's selling the superstructure, right? He's not selling the horrific ideas that sort of rope reactionaries into it. Or well, a different flavor of ideas. The chapter 8 in particular, speaking of child labor, this I was venting
this is such
about
a lighthearted episode.
speaking of child
the
labor.
way well because like that's the thing, like he says right at the beginning, oh yeah, there were bad capitalists who employed like cruel child labor, the implication being that there are non-cruel forms of child labor, right? And in chapter 8 he comes right out and says, yeah, one of my success stories is this kid who worked at a store for free. He did the thing that boomers say, oh yeah, go out, knock on doors, shake your prospective boss's hand, look him in the eye, say I want a job. This kid goes and works at a like general store, I guess, at age 12 for free. He's like, I want to be paid an exposure. And he does it for 2 years.
Grocery store.
Jesus.
Yes.
And a grocery, yes. And
Yeah.
he asks his boss for a salary once he's worked there for 2 years, and the boss says, well, I don't think you're good enough. Of course he would say that. Of course he would say that. You have a gullible, naive child working for you for free. Why would he kill that golden goose if you were in the fucking boss's position?
Yeah, no fucking way.
And I
Yeah.
want to note, he says in the section about Adam Smith and Marx, which ties to this, quote, "We all know the stories of greedy capitalists, child labor exploiters, and robber barons. Nevertheless, these are exceptions and not the rules," end quote. And then he goes on to like these stories of people's lives before they came to Amway. If we chose to believe Amway was the city on the hill that he says it is, it's not. But if we chose to believe it was, it still seems he's the exception. In his world, and because he can't really
Yeah.
stop gloating about how cool he is,
Right.
and so he then makes the other capitalists look bad. But he does want them, he has that solidarity with them. He has moments where he cites other capitalists as good, and his patron saint is Andrew Carnegie. He says Carnegie is the
Yeah,
patron saint of compassionate capitalism, and then he
he built so many libraries. What?
cites
Come
Mark
on.
Twain very clearly, ironically making fun of Andrew Carnegie as
Oh,
like an
that's
example of
awesome.
Mark Twain's
I
like.
missed that. That's so
Yeah,
fun.
Mark Twain says, asks Carnegie, "Would you send me a dollar for me to like buy something? Because you're such a good man." It was like clearly a joke, and he was like,
Right.
"We don't know if Car," but it's like the fact that Twain thought Carnegie would do such a thing,
Oh, that's awesome.
so
That's
fucking funny,
so
dude.
funny.
It's like lost in this section that's so skimmable, and I'm so glad that I
Right.
didn't like my eyes didn't glaze over.
But the
He then
total
goes and he
inability to
talks
see
of
the
what's his
irony.
name, Joseph Kellogg as a saint as well.
Yes,
Which, like, fuck you,
yes.
Kellogg. I want my foreskin back. Like, because he's like, you know, behind that whole thing of like getting repopularizing circumcision for Protestants. And
Oh,
I'm
I
in
didn't know
like,
that.
and then he uses Edward Jenner. Yeah, that wouldn't make a lot of sense to be saying that if not. Yeah, no. Fun fact, Kellogg's founder of Kellogg's cereal said that if you remove foreskins from children, then they wouldn't masturbate. So that's an
Oh,
interesting
well, I mean,
side tangent.
that's worked perfectly.
No, that's what happened. Yeah.
That's just not true. I'm sorry. I hate to break kayfabe here,
Yeah.
but that's just not
And it
true.
ended up leading to part of the reason that it got popular for Protestants again, in America. But yeah, and also my favorite thing in the entire book, my favorite thing in the entire book is in this section, is Edward Jenner being cited as
Yes.
an example of a compassionate capitalist. Edward Jenner being the man who invented the smallpox vaccine and said he did not want to copyright it and he didn't want money for it because it belonged to everyone. And he said, that's an example of a compassionate capitalist. And like, just like sit with that for a second. Why? How? Because, you know, Rich is own stock and like, and on the board of like hospitals and stuff. And I'm sure has made plenty of money from that. He's not saying that healthcare shouldn't be for profit. He talks in 10 powerful phrases about doing a supposedly lucrative healthcare merger.
Yeah, that was Blodgett and
Oh,
Butterworth
yeah. But
Hospitals in my hometown of
yeah.
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
But he gets to cite people like Mark Twain and people and people like Edward Jenner and stuff that are just so clearly not part of his vision. And he's just like, I don't know, up his own ass enough to just be
Oh
like,
yeah,
yeah,
I
no,
mean
they're part of the blob, they're part of the team.
the phrase where the phrase that he's holding up when he's touting the hospital merger is you can do it, you know? And you know, he applies that same sort of stick-to-itiveness to people paying off hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt. How? By getting in on the
Presumably.
ground floor with Amway. You know what's funny about Jenner though is, I mean, you know, the smallpox thing jumped out at me because you know who led the world in efforts to eradicate smallpox? You want to talk about like incentives, right? The Soviet Union introduced mandatory smallpox vaccination in 1919. It ended its morbidity in the country within a generation, produced over 1.5 billion doses. Like it's I mean, you know, where's the profit motive? Where was
Well,
it?
but that, I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, they didn't get their cut. The pharmaceutical
Yeah.
companies didn't get their cut.
Oh, Gorbachev was like, you know, we could get a cut of smallpox. That's why we should undo it. Got it.
This is the
Okay.
issue. This is the
Yeah,
concern.
they were being compassionate without the capitalism in that.
Perestroika is actually like Russian for making money from healthcare.
I think also to the point of hard work. My favorite quote in the whole thing was from 10 Powerful Phrases, where he says, and this is also You Can Do It. You Can Do It also describes the spirit of America and our free enterprise system that has been so important in my life. Helen and I contributed to the People's President Gallery at Mount Vernon in the hopes that this exhibit will preserve and restore our nation's respect and gratitude for George Washington and others who won the freedoms we enjoy today. The exhibits are visible reminders of this great leader who played an essential role in winning our freedom and creating our nation. As a young man, Washington was a brave horseman who helped tame the wilderness. He grew into a courageous leader fighting against formidable odds in battle and a wise first president who helped invent the United States of America.
He invented it.
He invented it. Of interest to me, this is the good part. Of interest to me as a business person, I also learned that he ran six businesses at Mount Vernon. Okay, who are the employees of those businesses, Rich? Who was he employing? What were the terms of their employment, Rich?
Right, Peter Richard, you would have loved Hamilton.
Oh, boy.
I
God.
came just like to a peek behind the scenes, Joss and I have a running joke about Hamilton set during the Chinese Revolution, with all manner of things, including Mao Zedong as King George.
Well, we're back. Ain't it grand? China's people finally made their stand. Yeah,
But
thanks, Rich.
nevertheless, I had to throw that in there. But thinking about, but he just starts listing historical figures, and that's why I thought of that.
Oh,
Is
sure.
he's just like, wouldn't it be cool if I just, oh, now Ronald Reagan, go back in time, Abraham Lincoln, Gerald Ford. He just starts saying names. He just starts
Right.
just throwing them out, and it's just like, And I understand Ten Powerful Phrases. He's kind of lost his sauce at that point. But like, he's just starting to. He's just doing the thing of like, wouldn't it be cool if I just said, here's a history thing. I also really like, because you talked about like the positivity.
You
I
cut out there
really.
for a moment. Did you mention Helen Keller?
Oh, he did have Helen Keller. Yeah, he also listed her.
Yeah.
Like,
I wonder if he knew that she was a socialist.
it wouldn't have mattered to him because he would have just listed her anyway. Like it.
Right,
I
right,
also
right.
like him saying, he goes, I have this up on my wall. I repeated it in the locker room to the Magic. Why not us? Why not now? Now we did lose. And
Yes,
it's like,
yes, yes.
the lesson there is like, and it's fine to chant, why not us? Why not now before a basketball game? I don't care. That's cool. That's good. But that being a me but it's like almost like a metaphor. It's like, yeah, they lost and they had that positivity and it's fine. They came back next season. But like, you don't have to turn that into a success story. It's a failure, and that's fine. And it's all part of, but like, he has this grand vision, and it is, he's got this like this desperate faith in free enterprise and capitalism and himself and how Christianity ties into it. And it's just this horrifying tower of gold he's wrought
Well,
before himself.
the point you make is interesting about like himself specifically, right? And in the way that he sort of sees
His
himself as the
family too, yeah.
protagonist of reality. I was curious if what you guys thought about like all of the anecdotes in which he talks about how somebody just came up to him out of their own volition, out of just like a desire to like say hey and told him how great he is. And like how he seemingly again is this calculated? Does he not understand that these people are buttering him up, or does he really think he's that great? I don't know.
A
There's
poor
half
Mexican
of it. I
woman
mean,
came up to me. Yeah, like that. Come on.
you can read that either of those ways. I mean, also just by the nature of what he's selling, right? It's the mysticization of free enterprise, right? It's this quasi-religious aspect of it. You know, you have to have your parables. You have to have your, Amway healing the blind, healing. I mean, literally, like that entrepreneurial spirit here and there, like driving people to get up out of their hospital beds and walk, right? It's, this is the seemingly impossible things that that free enterprise and the ability to flog stuff to your downline can empower you to do, right? And it's this bizarre, and I mean, what's especially infuriating about it to me is this bizarre funhouse mirror of very true things, right? I mean, here on 262, when we're talking about the dude with the rotting lungs, right? I mean, oh, Jim Floor, yes, our good friend Jim Floor. It's very difficult for anybody to become successful on his own in this very competitive dog eat dog world, cafeteria ceiling reminds us. We need each other not just during these difficult startup times, but forever. It's hard to help people realize how much more power we have working together, how much more we can do collectively than if we try to work alone. That's the genius of this business, Jim adds. No!
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, you get so close. It's so close and yet so far.
And well, I mean, just 3 pages prior to like the way he talks about Willie Bass with the poisoned welding lungs, right? And like, oh, he says this guy's taken some wrong turns in his life. What wrong turns? He was poisoned on his job.
Shouldn't have been poor. That was a mistake.
He shouldn't have had he should have had a more can-do attitude to his torn up lungs, clearly.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the lung thing is funny too. When you get to the part in 10 Positive Phrases where he talks about how like he was fucking what 70 years old and his heart was giving out, and of course he had the resources to scour the entire planet for a replacement heart and was able to get hooked up with one in the United Kingdom, possibly bypassing the NHS. It's really not clear like how actually ethical this operation was. Like the NHS waiting list is mentioned very briefly, but then is not brought up again. And it's like, again, you know that most people can't do this, right? Like, this isn't the lived experience of most people. Surely you
He
understand that.
literally says, he says only a cynic could say that that wasn't God's doing.
Yes!
And it's like that heart came to me. And
I mean, even questioning this, right, is, you're negative, you're a cynic, you're holding on to this attitude that prevents you from advancing,
Just coming from a background where so much of it is like, no, God will provide and God will help those who help themselves. And not being someone who, like, I don't, hate that mentality because a lot of it is just providing the hope to get to the next day. And then what God is doing, whether you believe it's literal or not, is you getting up and you making it happen. And then things do sometimes get better. Him saying that and him using his billions and his billions being an arm of God, and me thinking of, the people I've known who have just straight up relied on God, and it just hasn't come through. I knew a girl who was told in church, she was paralyzed from the neck down, and she was told in church, tomorrow God will heal you. And she was a teenager, and the whole church came around her, and God didn't heal her. And then the guy, not wanting to save face, basically said, well, it was a spiritual healing, something like that.
Oh
And
my
there's always
God.
an answer. And to hear that, and it's like, and for her, she didn't get to get up out of the bed. And you know what? Last I knew of her, she had learned to draw with just her teeth, and she was going to college and she was doing her thing. And I don't know where she's at right now, and I hope she's doing great. It wasn't fine for her, and it wasn't. And if he hadn't been a billionaire, he would have fucking died. He would have had a heart attack and died. And you know what? That and then people would have had to deal with it, and that would have been what it was. And for him to get that heart, someone had to die in a horrific car accident. But because he thinks he's the protagonist of reality, and because he thinks his family is part of that, and he can pass on his family dynastically, and that makes his family a family business and good and cool. And he said it took us courage to do that. Just, it is so deeply sinister. Like, this is just like, as someone who still has some modicum of Christian faith, this is antichrist shit, if there is an antichrist. Like, I don't know how else to put that. Like, does that, if that makes any sense? And just fuck him and fuck this whole mentality. My God.
I think it's what you're speaking to is something that I took a long time in my own life to begin to intuit because, again, of the fact that in West Michigan, they have managed to make this way of thinking the way that everybody thinks, right? It's kind of like the woke mind virus, where everybody just is so bought into this idea of the compassionate capitalist who is able to do the right things for the right people in the right ways and who gets rewarded by God. And this also comes back to Calvinism. This comes back to the Calvinist idea that there's two kinds of people in this world. There's God's elect. They are the people who are chosen by God, to basically be in his kingdom forever. And then there are the non-elect. And if you're not among the elect, sorry, sucks to be you. And so this kind of philosophy completely aligns because if it, what you can do is you can look at the people who don't get there, right? The people who only manage to earn $5,000 as Amway independent distributors, the people who drop dead of a heart attack at the mere age of 65, and you look at them and you're like, well, why did that happen? Well, who can say? But perhaps they weren't among the elect, like me. Isn't that great?
Perhaps they weren't, as he puts it in the I'm Sorry chapter of 10 Positive Phrases. Were they well poisoners? Were they lawnmowers? Were they life enhancers?
It reminds me of the headmaster of my Christian high school. There was a student who got expelled, and it doesn't matter the details of it, but he basically said, "Well, this was always going to happen." And me being a 16-year-old smart ass, I was like, well, that's not fair. That's not whatever, trying to do some logic, whatever. Like, God wouldn't do it. And he goes, what right has the pot to say to the potter, why have you made me this way? And it's like, I don't know, if I was a pot and the potter fucked me up, I would say, why did you make I would. I don't know about you. And it's really easy to say that when you are a glistening golden pot on a literal pyramid of other pots on the top. It's a
You've heard of Top of the Pops. Get ready for Top of the Pots.
So, you know, we've talked about this philosophy and how diseased it is. And we could go, I mean, there could be probably a whole podcast on like just tracing the connections of this guy's money and to where it's gone into the relationships.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
Just
imagine
entire
a podcast
right-wing...
tracking down all the people that he, that whose stories he flogs here. Right. Like, yeah. Where are they now? Where are they now?
The people in countries that, you know, he's invested in. He's talking about investing in Mexico and he's like, it's not turned us a profit yet, but we're going to do for these people. He's investing in Eastern Europe and predicting that soon it will be like Western Europe. It's going to be great because we have capitalism now. How did that
it's
fucking
fascinating
work out?
Seeing this from an early 90s perspective,
yes,
too, right? Mm-hmm. Before, especially
yeah, the end
before,
history, right? Like,
yeah,
everything
exactly.
is going to be good from here on out.
Yeah,
and he says, "Oh yeah." He literally says, "Oh, you know, don't be afraid if other countries compete." You know, I wonder if he would have written the same thing now that China is outproducing the United States in, you know, every conceivable metric.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of directions this could go, and we can't go in all of them, and we don't need to. But as we sort of come to an end here, towards the end here, I wanted to know. Are there any other major things that y'all wanted to talk about, to address, quotes, really anything? Because as like digestible as these books are, there is just so many directions they could go, both on a very specific level and very generally. So I just kind of wanted to open the floor on that.
Well, one thing is going through these books, I realized how so much of sort of, as I was saying, the sort of, received wisdom around me, right, was taken straight from this shit. And
yes.
Joss, you were in my fair city not too long ago, and you weren't there for very long, but I am curious if you noticed anything about that place that spoke to this philosophy.
I mean, you know, other than the DeVos and Van Andel name looming over everything, you know, it's subtle, right? It's insidious, yeah. You know. I mean, I think it's most in your face in the Gerald Ford thing, and even then, you know, you have to have sort of interrogated history to really have that jump out as weird at you. There's a statue of what was his name, Arthur Vandenberg, who helped invent NATO. Like it's you're reading this book and it's very much the Bible of a landscape, you know, a landscape that has been conquered, a war that has been won, right? Somebody who has arrogated to himself the right to say, well, you know, like there's problems today. Our leaders used to be able to come to conclusions via debate and discussion. They disagreed about domestic affairs sometimes, but we're totally united on foreign affairs, like imperialism. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's somebody who is completely comfortable in summarizing the arc of history as toward free enterprise, in summarizing the arc of history as toward individual empowerment to rip each other off, right? You know, there's so much beneath the surface. This is the tip of such an insidious fucking iceberg. And I mean, it is perhaps comforting that you don't really have to look very hard to sort of brush the scales away from this.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I mean, you say that for us, but I think that's an open question, right? Like that we do come at it with a certain angle and a certain amount of knowledge, but I'm not convinced that that's necessarily the case for most people. But maybe it is. I mean, because, you know, this is like fucking 30 years ago now.
Right.
Compassionate Capitalism, and like a decade from the other book, a decade and a half. Do we feel like at this point, this sort of philosophy is still what governs? Or do we think that it's moved past this to something even weirder?
I think, go ahead, Joss.
Well, because I mean, what really puts the lie to the idea of compassionate capitalism winning out, right? You know, let's just say that's, you know, the arc of history does bend toward justice. Who's the richest man in the world right now? Elon Musk, you know, somebody who's objectively in over his head, who has buried himself in industries he doesn't understand and who is living by government subsidy, right? He, you know, somebody who, and who comes there from a place of total privilege, right? I think, I mean, of course he does have his rabid defenders, you know, his blue check stands, but, and perhaps this is anecdotal, perhaps it's the circles I run in, but I think it's also becoming much, much clearer, that he's a nerd, you know, that there is something better, you know. I mean, union activity is on the rise, you know, young people's view of socialism is on the rise, you know. I mean, there's always been this sort of simmering discontent with the US government and with capitalism and with imperialism. It's ebbed and it's flowed, but you know, there is discontent, and what is necessary and what is possible is for people to sort of prescribe, you know, not individual free enterprise, not, you know, climbing to the top of this bucket of ants that that we are, but to, you know, sort of shake it until it until we fall out and escape. I think there is that rising consciousness, and if people don't have the answers yet, they don't have very far to look.
I will also say that I think in response to that, this book would not be written in the same way today. If this was written today, this would be a liberal writing this probably. More likely, this would more likely be a Democrat talking about compassionate capitalism and like how we need entrepreneurs to be good people. I think the right-wing position has become in a lot of ways, at least among these tippity top, fuck you, I've got mine, which is of course what he actually thinks somewhere in there. Or at least would revert to if it came push came to shove. But I think that through its current, you know, because of the way things are drawn, because it seems like these imperialist super profits aren't hitting like they used to, because you know, the average American just I don't think is being duped into thinking they're going to own a yacht one day. Or I think the concept of the temporarily embarrassed millionaire is just seeming sillier and sillier. And even if you do believe in the Amway dream, because of these things that he sort of dismisses as, oh yeah, there's a climate thing and whatever, it'll be fine. Now has people like, well, what if I do get my millions? What does it matter? Because of that, I think the right wing has reverted to this position of hyper individualism that is no longer, that is more about like we are closing ranks, we are closing borders. No, I don't want to compete with other countries. No, I don't want to share the story of the woman from Mexico. No, I don't care about, you know, they're saying, no, I don't care about bringing somebody over to my side that was Nation of Islam. No, it is time to close ranks. We've got ours. We're going to win. It is a battle. And I think that that's scary. I know that that's scary. I know that that's led to a lot of terrifying things. It also means that these people are not comfortable in a way that they were. They do not feel like history is over anymore. They feel like this is a live question. You can see that simmering anxiety coming in, even in 10 pause or 10 powerful phrases, that fear of that specter re-rising as the financial crisis comes around. You can see he doesn't have that same smugness. He's still smug, but he doesn't have that same smug, like, oh, we won. He's not end zone dancing anymore. And
I mean, that's
therefore, I genuinely believe that shows there is this path forward, but it's not a done deal. And unlike Rich, I don't think that like it's settled. I don't think that history is just going to work out. I think we've got to make it work out
Yeah,
little
I
by
mean
little.
that's the thing of these people. They're never, regardless of how far they have managed to go in reconstructing society to their benefits, you know, and empowering their whims in the doing of that, you know, they're never comfortable in their power. You know, I mean, you know, 1857, right? The Dred Scott decision formalizes, you know, the extension of slavery's influence into the North, right? What happens 3 years later? The Civil War, right? There, it is never enough for these people. These people are never secure in their power, and it's because throughout history, there are many more people, I believe, recognizing that power for what it is, unfairly wrested from the masses. You know, even if the masses don't know yet that they are the masses, you know, that consciousness is simmering, and all it takes is a little bit of shaping.
And I think that the reason that that becomes more possible and more immediate is, once again, I mean, again, sounding like the cliche Marxist here, but it's the material conditions, right? Like by 1994, it was already not particularly credible to be like, oh, you could start as an Amway independent distributor and make a fortune, right? It wasn't true back then. It's certainly not true now. Back then, it was already a stretch to be able to afford a mortgage on a home for many, if not most Americans. Now it's nearly impossible, right? The capitalists, rather than operating from a position of well, we can allow things to grow as long as we get the biggest piece, they've realized that they can only succeed by operating from a place of scarcity because they see where things are going and they are grasping and clinging on to the things that they have as desperately as possible because they know that the future may be one in which, when push comes to shove, they will be in direct conflict over an increasingly scarce set of resources and wealth. And so, yeah, I think if you look at that, that's why people get more and more and more radicalized. I was reading an article about this, and you know, it was, I think, some liberal bemoaning, well, why can't we just get along? But the reality is, if you're in a situation where you are seeing things for what they are, which is we are ultimately all in potential competition for resources, which is what capitalism allows for, or we are committed to more fair, equitable distribution of existing resources and growth that allows for the same, which is socialism. Like, that's it. It's actually super fucking simple. And it also puts the lie to this idea of compassionate capitalism, because what is compassion really? Like, really, truly. For Rich DeVos, what compassion means is you see somebody and you go, oh, that's not compassion. Compassion is when you see someone and you are willing to fight for them. You are willing to organize for them. You are willing to bring other people together with you to make that thing happen for everyone, not just for you, not just for your fucking downline, not just for the people in your, I don't know, church community. It needs to be for everyone, because if it's not for everybody, it's not for anybody.
Facts.
What he terms compassion is the buying of indulgences. You know, and we know where that leads.
Absolutely. Well, I can't. I've got something I need to. I've got a strong point to end it on. Before we do that, Josh, let people know where to find you. Let people know where to go. You may have heard of this fella before, but I'm gonna go ahead and give him the spiel anyway, because
I feel,
it's worth giving.
If you are listening to this show, there are at least decent odds that you may have heard of The Worst of All Possible Worlds. It is a podcast in which every week we do a case study in the pop culture of this dying empire, and occasionally other dying empires too, but
Now in
mostly
the
this one.
Screwtape Letters.
And so, if that sounds like something you're interested in, you know, we do a lot of the same kind of like really deep, rigorous thought about this culture. We talk about movies, we talk about video games, we talk about theater a lot and musicals, and of course, we talk about the radio drama Adventures in Odyssey, which is
Of
a
which you can
children's.
hear the two of us on an
Absolutely.
episode from a month or two ago.
Yeah, that's
Evangelical radio
episode.
drama.
I don't remember the episode number, but yes,
It's
Joss and
called Wit
Jacob.
Fucking Dies.
Wit
Yeah,
is
Wit
Wit fucking
fucking
dies for
dies.
real.
For real.
And it was a lot of fun. We had a great time, and it gave us a great opportunity to help Jacob process some childhood trauma as well.
That
So
is true. That is true. We stay doing that on this show
we
and
stay
other.
doing it. We stay doing it.
I
Um,
have,
so
yeah, absolutely. Go
yeah.
check it out. It is really one of my favorite shows.
Thank
Really,
you.
I really do love Worst of All Possible Worlds.
I'm
And
working on the Death Stranding episode right now. It's
oh hell yeah.
no spoilers, because I'm currently playing Death
That's
Stranding.
what's up.
I'll listen to the episode after I finish playing it.
Well, there we go.
So worstpossible.world is our website. You can find us in any podcast client, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Bosch J.
Heck yeah. Well, I have two things to close this out. The first is, we introduced a segment in our last episode. It's Jacob's I Can Fix Him segment, and there's no one to fix in this book. So the
No.
segment's already been ruined.
What about Jim Floor? Can we fix him?
Jim Flory.
Jim Floor doesn't need fixing. He's perfect.
Yes. Principal's office wall.
Yeah, there you go. Two, I just to sign us off, I have 10 powerful phrases to deliver to you.
Oh, good, good, good.
I'm wrong. I'm sorry. You can do it.
Oh.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
Oh.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I need you.
Oh my.
Oh, okay.
I trust you.
Thank you.
I respect you.
As you should.
I love you.
Thank you.
And as a bonus, because I'm reading through the contents list of the chapters, praise for Rich DeVos. Thanks
All
for listening,
praise.
All praise to Rich DeVos. Thanks for listening, folks.